Now that the game is done, it's our time to check in.
Here comes the catch and shoot three from the corner, and Lillard splashes it through. Fading out of bounds, a buzzer beater from Damian Lillard.
Bucks Talk starts now.
Lots of time. Giannis slams it home. Oh, a rim-rocking alley-oop.
And now, live from Fiserv Forum, here's Justin Garcia and Brandon Snide.
Well, not really anything to dislike about this one tonight for the Bucks, who came into this game in a very interesting spot. I think this really could have gone a number of ways. We were talking about it before the game, a few of us, and thoughts of, hey, what do you expect? How is this one going to go tonight? I was pretty steadfast. I thought the Bucks were either going to lose by double digits or win by double digits. And in the first couple of minutes of the game, it certainly looked like it was going to be the former. But after an 18-3 start to this game for the Miami Heat, the Bucks would outscore them 122-78, a near 50-point difference the rest of the way. It wasn't just one thing. Damian Lillard was great tonight. Damian Lillard had an unofficial triple-double as he recorded that 10th rebound late. Ultimately had it taken away from him, but 11 assists, 9 rebounds, 29 points from Damian Lillard. The Miami Heat simply had no answer for him. They changed up their starting lineup before this game, inserted the rookie Pelle Larsson because of his defensive ability and length to throw him out there on Damian Lillard. Didn't matter. Had no impact on the game. Damian Lillard forced 3 early fouls in the first 2 minutes of this game on Pelle Larsson. And the Bucks just had a counter for everything Miami did. We saw the Bucks run zone in the first half of this game. They did not go back to it in the second half. The opposite of what we've seen from Doc Rivers throwing that zone out there at times. Giannis was dominant again, getting to his spots. A very strong showing on the defensive end, specifically 3 matchups that he was, or 3 instances, 3 possessions where he was matched up on Bam Adebayo. And that, to me, is one of the big differences between this year's team and last year's team. We are officially beyond the midpoint of the season, but we are starting to see marked difference in this year's Bucks team versus last year's Bucks team. And, oh, by the way, you look at the calendar, and you see it's January 23rd. I think we all know what I'm getting to here, but it was 1 year ago today, not that Doc Rivers was hired, but that the Bucks made a coaching change with a 30-13 record. So as we sit here now, they're 25-17. So basically 4 games off that pace for a team that started the season 2-8, had a lot of questions built up, a lot of people leaving them for dead, and now quietly, the Bucks have not only righted the ship, they have had an elite defense all season long, even in the first 10 games of the season, and the offense is starting to get there. 855-616-1620, the number to join us tonight on Bucks Talk. Do want to get to the matchup with the Los Angeles Clippers tomorrow, the rest of the road trip as well. So the Bucks are going to finish the month of January on the road with their final 4 games. Maybe potentially 5, too, as it's still TBD on when that New Orleans Pelicans game is going to be played. But we cannot lose sight of what they did. It's one regular season game. The timeline of events that Damian Lillard just went through, I want to get to that. And what makes this so impressive by what the Bucks did. Some questions that other people had, too. One of the common questions that was put out there, why didn't the Bucks wait until yesterday to fly into New Orleans, knowing that there was going to be this snowstorm? I want to get to that as well. The whole week and everything that it's brought with it. We'll get into that conversation coming up after this. 96, the final score here. The Bucks take down the Miami Heat inside of Fiserv Forum in a one-off home game. A very, very interesting day and week that it's been for this Milwaukee Bucks team. So, again, I don't think the audience of Bucks fans needs the catch-up, but just in case you do, the Bucks played Sunday night in here at home against the Philadelphia 76ers, and it was during the game Sunday night that we were notified the Bucks are going to leave Monday for New Orleans. Originally intended, planned on leaving Tuesday, but look, we knew a storm was going to hit that region and specifically New Orleans, nobody envisioned 10 inches of snow. So there's been a lot of questions of, well, why didn't the Bucks just fly into New Orleans Wednesday and wait to see if the city was just too under attack that there's no way this game was going to be played? I mean, the Bucks were doing their due diligence and being proactive and saying, look, the storm is supposed to hit Tuesday. By all accounts, I believe it was 5 inches of snow forecasted to land in New Orleans. So they wanted to leave early to get in front of that. Nobody saw 10 inches of snow coming. I know the Bucks did it today, but that's because it was literally the only option they had. And I was told, so first it was a noon departure this afternoon. You couldn't get clearance. The city was still shut down. The airport was shut down in New Orleans. So it kept getting pushed back further and further. It's finally 2 o'clock. That was the intended depart time. Didn't leave until closer to 3. But from what I was told, 3:30 was the drop dead time for the Bucks to be in the air on their way back to Milwaukee. If that didn't happen, then they were going to have to reevaluate actually playing this game. It's been a week, long and short of it. They did not get a chance to do anything physical on Monday because you're just arriving into New Orleans, waiting to see what's going to happen there. Tuesday, they had a scheduled practice. Did not happen. It was supposed to take place at Tulane. Couldn't practice because you had no way to get to the gym. Wednesday, supposed to have a shoot-around. That's canceled for the same reasons. The city was completely shut down. So not only is this the Bucks not having any games between now and Sunday when they played a couple of days ago against the Sixers, it's no physical activity. No guys picking up or touching a basketball. I mean, Giannis did in a ballroom dribbling around, but it was guys basically fighting over exercise equipment in a gym at the hotel just to get some type of reps and doing a lot of stretching, as Doc Rivers said. So it has been a challenging week. It has been a very strange week. You did not know what exactly to expect from the Bucks when this game tipped off. And I gave the high-level version of it. After the game, we caught up with Damian Lillard, and he went through a more detailed view of this is what the week has been like for us.
I mean, going in, we got to New Orleans Monday early just so that we could get into New Orleans for the game on Wednesday and not be, you know, not have to postpone that game because we couldn't make it into the city. We got into the city and then they ended up shutting the city down, so we didn't even play the game on Wednesday. So we ended up being there Monday night, Tuesday night, and then last night, and we got up today and we were supposed to leave at noon. That got pushed back to 2 o'clock. So we didn't end up getting in the air until 3 p.m. from New Orleans. And then when we landed, it was like, you know, go straight to the arena. They were telling us on the plane we got to head straight to the arena. So we landed. Everybody got in their cars, and we came directly to the arena and tried to, you know, get into our routines pregame. And we did what we could, you know, and in preparation for the game tonight. We did our scouting report and everything on the plane. They handed it out. And we came out here, and our minds was just right. You know, when your mind is right and everybody is connected and understand what the task is at hand, it's amazing what you can get done. And we had that today, and we just got it done.
Oh, by the way, the Bucks are leaving at 10 a.m. tomorrow to fly out to Los Angeles because, as Stock River said, it's a 4 to 5 hour flight. I mean, we got to find that time somewhere. And that was the original plan, to fly out at 10 a.m. I know there was a lot of talk with those in the travel party of, after this last day, we're not actually leaving at 10 a.m. tomorrow, are we? But they are. So this is going to be a week that many players on this team will not forget, the oddities of being in New Orleans for 10 inches of snow, having that game postponed. And again, I think the big thing here is the message from Doc Rivers, and he talked about this after the game too, that it was important that Giannis and Dame were the two guys that really embraced this and spread the message as well, that the coaching staff, everybody made it clear, we want to play this game. Don't approach this with ambiguity. Don't go into this 50-50 thinking, hey, maybe they're going to cancel the game. We want the attitude of, we want to play this game. We're prepared to play this game for a number of reasons, right? Like, that way, if the game takes place, that's the approach you're bringing in. But also, I mean, it's the Bucks' best option. This is in their best interest to have played this game today because of the fact that this is their 42nd game played this season. You look up and down the Eastern Conference. Now you're at 42. The Cavs are at 43. The Celtics are playing their 45th game tonight. The Knicks have played 45 games. The Pacers are at 44. They play their 45th game on Saturday. Pistons are at 44. The Magic are at 46. The Hawks are at 44. The Heat are at 43. The Bulls are at 44. So you just go up and down the list here. The Charlotte Hornets, 45 games. There is only one team in the Eastern Conference that has played fewer games than the Bucks, and that is the Charlotte Hornets. That's the only team in all of the league, for that matter, that has played fewer games than have the Bucks. So you have one of the oldest teams in the league, and you've got the most games to make up for. Where, in other words, your second half of the schedule is starting later than most teams' second half, because 45, 46, 44, routinely, that's what you're seeing. The Bucks just finally got to 42 tonight. So you're already going to have to make up quite a bit. That's where back-to-backs come into play. You postpone this game tonight, too. That's two more back-to-backs that you're adding to the schedule, having to make up that Pelicans game and now potentially tonight. So what you look at is the pockets on the schedule where you already have 2 days off in between games. Well, the bad news for the Bucks is they only have three of those on their schedule. And one, the first of those three, is next week. Wednesday, Thursday, the Bucks are currently off. That is still TBD. Who knows if that Pelicans game will get made up on one of those 2 days. But what makes it even worse and even more difficult, and another one of those reasons why Doc Rivers said, look, we wanted to play this game today to not have to figure more stuff out down the road. Those three pockets of 2 days off in between games for the Bucks, none of those line up with off days for the New Orleans Pelicans, where you could feasibly play a game. There are some off days that they both have. However, for New Orleans, that is either a day off before a back-to-back or a day off after a back-to-back. So those are out the window. You're not going to play a back-to-back-to-back. That means a third team is going to be impacted here. So it's going to be a game that the Bucks are playing or the Pelicans are playing, where let's say the Bucks are playing the Hawks on a Monday. And the league would look at that and say, okay, Sunday's an off day for both teams. We're going to push this game up to Monday, or Sunday, I beg your pardon. Then Monday, hey, Bucks, you're flying out to New Orleans to play the Pelicans. So we're essentially rescheduling two games for you. That's why you didn't want to face another game that was postponed. And the Bucks were able to not only avoid that, but put together an impressive performance with this victory tonight on both ends of the floor, offense and defense. I do want to touch on a couple of things with the standings and where the Bucks are, that we're now officially past the midpoint of the season. A few of those interesting things we mentioned about tiebreakers, paying attention to the loss column. We'll get to that and more of a look at what this defense has turned in, not only from start to finish, but really in the last 32 games now. We'll get to those views coming up next on Bucks Talk. 125-96, the final score tonight inside of Fiserv Forum. The Bucks take care of the Miami Heat really with ease. And even more impressive when you factor in everything we just went through, the travel log here for the Bucks that Damian Lillard shared with us in a very interesting week. And now it gets to be even more of a challenge for the Bucks. As we mentioned, they're going to leave tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. to fly out to Los Angeles and get set to play the Clippers. From there, you will go to Utah for a game Monday night, then another back-to-back. The Bucks were supposed to have three of these in the next 2 weeks. Now it only becomes two with that Pelicans game postponed. Who knows? It could once again become three if that's made up at some point this next week. But a back-to-back Monday, Tuesday, Monday night in Utah against the Jazz, Tuesday night in Portland against the Trailblazers, and then you wrap up the month of January in San Antonio 1 week from tomorrow against the Spurs. When you look at those teams, you know, a road trip is going to present its challenges here. But the way the Bucks are currently playing, they're going to be favored in those games. And you like their chances against anyone because of the growth we continue to see on the offensive end of the floor. And this defense, as we've said many times, it's not going away. That we are now 42 games of sample size that we're viewing here. You don't even have to cherry pick and take out the first 10 games and say, well, since the 2-8 start, the Bucks have done this. I mean, since the 2-8 start, the Bucks are 23-9. The numbers are even better. But what I cannot stress enough is how solid they have been for 42 games. They are now once again in the top three in all of the categories that we place the most significance on. If you got to be in the top 10 in offense, defense, and net rating. I've had the conversation elsewhere, too, about, look, we make so much about the defense and where your defense needs to rank to win a championship. It does need to be, at the very least, in the better half of the league. I think the Denver Nuggets, of all the recent teams, were the only team that won an NBA championship with a defense outside of the top 10. The caveat there is it's a defense that was really starting to play much better down the stretch for the Denver Nuggets in the second half of the season, and certainly in the playoffs, an excellent defense. We know all that. Hey, your defense has to be good. We learned that the hard way a year ago, I think. But you don't mention the offense quite as much. And what stands out is when you go through the past multiple decades and look at recent NBA champions, one of the sticky parts with it is we've had a couple of dynasties. When you think about the Cleveland Cavaliers in, you know, granted not multiple championships, but Cleveland representing the Eastern Conference, five consecutive years, think about what they did. It was one of those super teams. The Miami Heat, same story. A super team that reached four straight finals. Spurs, a little bit similar of a story. Of course, you had the Golden State Warriors, who broke every single record known to man with their offense. But year by year, when you go through for the past 25 or so years, there have been three instances of teams winning a championship with an offense outside of the top 10. And believe it or not, the lowest rated offense to win a championship in recent years was the Golden State Warriors a couple of years ago. The same Golden State Warriors with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, a modified defense, however, it was their defense that took them to that championship in 2022. 16th ranked offense that year. But the long and short of it is, you know, we spend so much time saying the defense has to be good. It has to be in the top 10 for you to have any type of chance. That is true. The offense needs to be there as well, right? You either have to be elite in one of those and just good enough in the other, or you got to be very good in both of them. That has been the recipe for success. So why am I bringing all of this up? Because right now, looking at a 42-game sample size, the Bucks have been very good in both of those. Through these 42 games, the Bucks offense has quietly climbed up to 10th now, and we spent so much time earlier in the season talking about, hey, can you, this Bucks offense is close to the bottom 10 in the league, like with Giannis, with Damian Lillard. How is this the case? Chris Middleton hadn't returned yet. When he does, that'll start to move the needle, and we'll start to see some more growth. You'll start to see the bench have an impact. All of that is true. I think it's other things that have led to it. But 10th best offense in the league through all 42 of these games. Defense is currently 8th best in the league. And when you look at the neighborhood the Bucks are in defensively, they have a 110.5 defensive rating. The Minnesota Timberwolves are 7 at 110.4. The Memphis Grizzlies are 6 at 109.8. And the Boston Celtics are 5 right now at 109.2. So you are not too far removed from the top 5 in the league for the entire season. And then net rating, look, what the Oklahoma City Thunder have done so far this season, a 12.3 net rating is absurd. The Cleveland Cavaliers are knocking on the door of a double-digit net rating at 9.8. The Celtics' offense hasn't been quite as good as it was a year ago. Same story for the defense, and yet the Celtics, a 9.5 net rating. Bucks' net rating doesn't look great in that company at 3.3. It's still the 8th best in the league. So they have gotten into the top 10 in all three of those categories that we look at, and every year you line up to see, okay, who are the teams that are finishing in the top 10 in each of those. Still got a long way to go. You still got 40 games to play in order to stay there. But we never had any moment last year through all of it. And again, we're saying this on the one-year anniversary of the Bucks making a coaching change when they were 30-13. You never had any pockets or any stretches like this where you looked at it and you said, Bucks defense has been pretty good. The offense has been pretty good. Net rating is really good. It was always, hey, the offense is elite. You got to get the defense close to at least league average. Can they get into the middle? You had stretches where the defense played better, played a lot like what we're seeing now, especially when Doc Rivers initially took over this team. But when that happened, the offense wasn't quite there. So, again, this is 42 games that we're talking about. This isn't cherry-picking the numbers. This isn't looking at, hey, since this date. You can do that, and it looks even better. If we take out the 2-8 start, the Bucks' offense is 114.9. That is ninth best in the league, actually eighth best, tied with the Dallas Mavericks. Their defense is a 108.9. That is fifth best in the league, and it's not too far behind the Houston Rockets for third best. And their net rating, about twice what it is for the entire season, 5.9. That's also eighth best. So the big things that stand out was the offense in those first 10 games. Sure, your defense has gotten better. The offense just continues to get better and better. And another thing we go back to a lot, that we had this conversation late last year, over the summer, early this year, the roster makes sense. The pieces fit into place. And I know there's one thing that can bring anxiety for a lot of Bucks fans. We saw all of the discourse this week when there are a number of trade rumors, and it seemed like all it took to get a 100% approval rating for Chris Middleton was for Bradley Beal's name to become linked to the Milwaukee Bucks. But I know the anxiety that it brings here when you say, this is starting to work, it's starting to fall into place, it looks like the chemistry is there, I don't know that I want to disrupt it. It's going to be an interesting conversation to have for the Bucks coming up here in the next 2 weeks. The trade deadline is 2 weeks away today, to the day, the trade deadline here on February 6th. So what do the Bucks do? What do they need to do? Right? Like, it's not to say, hey, everything works great, we don't need to tinker. But when you look at just how long it took to build up that chemistry and continuity and get everything to fall into place a season ago, it didn't. And it feels like it's there now. That is one thing to keep in mind over the course of these next 2 weeks. So what has really made the offense click? I do want to get into that conversation. And we'll start to take a look ahead to Saturday night when the Bucks get their first look at the Los Angeles Clippers. We'll get into all of that after this. .125-96, our final score here. The Bucks take down the Miami Heat tonight. Not a pretty loss for the Miami Heat, who are certainly dealing with it. Everything going on with the Jimmy Butler saga. I was talking with someone connected to the Miami Heat before this game tonight and just tried to see, look, where did this go south with Jimmy Butler? Does this date back to the end of season press conference that Pat Riley had where he essentially called Jimmy Butler out? Like, how did this change so rapidly and not getting the extension? And I was told it's always been about the money. And the thought here is he gets moved before this trip ends. The whole thing has not been fun to be around. Everybody involved wants to move on from it already. So that's the feeling in Miami, where you could sense the vibes, even tonight as we got ready for Eric Spoelstra to come in. And I understand the Heat are going to have to do this at every stop on the road to put the message out there to media members that aren't around the team on an everyday basis. But before Eric Spoelstra even entered the room, Miami Heat Public Relations came in, and Mr. Spoelstra will not be handling any questions about Jimmy Butler tonight, FYI. So it's just this dark cloud that's hanging over the team. You have these stretches where you start to play better. There's a lot to like about Miami and the young players, too. Tyler Hero, the way that he has played so far this season. Khalil Ware has been terrific for them in short spurts so far of late. So you have some nice pieces, but it just feels like this entire thing is anchored down by what's going on with Jimmy Butler. All of the rumors, we saw the Bucks maybe indirectly pulled into that earlier in the week as well, when it started to explode into it. It's got to be a mega trade where you're involving four teams, possibly five, and it would have Bradley Beal going somewhere other than Miami. Well, we've since then have seen numerous sourced reports of, no, the Bucks Bucks have not had those discussions. They are not in on Bradley Beal. But for the next 2 weeks, it's going to be very fascinating to monitor not just the Jimmy Butler situation, but the trade deadline as a whole. Because you think back to last year, we didn't really have a big day at the deadline or any huge deadline deals. The two biggest trades that happened last year, OG Anunoby traded to the New York Knicks. That happened in December. And then Pascal Siakam, his teammate with the Toronto Raptors, traded to the Indiana Pacers. That was a January trade, too. So those weren't deadline deals. But now with this CBA and everything that you've heard, everybody that listens to this show knows more about the second apron than they ever envisioned knowing about it. These things are what you get the sense is going to make it very difficult to pull off this type of trade, and why everything that you're starting to hear and all the murmurs is a multi-team trade because of, number one, salary structure and contracts, but also things like the second and first apron. So if you're a second apron team, you cannot take back $1 more than what you send out. You have teams that are looking to get under the second apron, but in the case of the Bucks, you got to take things like bonuses and unlikely bonuses into account. They may not count against your cap. It does count against your second apron. So if you have a player that has $3 million in bonuses, if he plays X amount of games this season, even if he's not going to hit that games played, that $3 million goes towards your apron figure. So between all that, sign-in trades and things that would hard cap you at a first apron, you need a degree in economics, essentially, to be able to figure out which teams can participate in this trade. If I'm just looking at, well, this team has this cap space and this team has this cap space, not so easy, because you may be hard capped. So I don't know how much movement we're going to see, but the fact that all of these moves that you start to hear talked about are three-team deals or four-team deals. As Brian Windhorst and a few others have always said, if you got to look at a three-team deal, it means you don't have a deal. I think that's about to change because of the apron and because both aprons, I should say. But because of that, with the CBA, it's just going to make it difficult to find a lot of these, we'll take this on, give us some assets, and we'll give you this in return, because it's not that simple anymore. And why I bring this up is because of those numbers that we just went through. Are there areas that the Bucks can upgrade? Sure. Any team can make that case. But it is a night and day difference this year to last year in where this team is in terms of their cohesion, how the pieces fit on the floor. The reason for that, I think, is simple. It's a couple of things. Number one, you know, we mentioned this leading into the season of how much of an impact would this play, that the Bucks basically got, Doc Rivers got to audit the class last year. Came in right around this time, February 1st, I believe, was his first game on the sidelines coaching the Bucks. Got a couple of months to look at the group and to really get to know some of the young guys too, and go into the offseason and give them, here's your program, here's what we're going to work on in training camp, and get to know these guys as people, as players, how they fit together. Another piece of the offseason, you knew Brooke Lopez was under contract. You knew Chris Middleton was under contract. You knew you had Damian Lillard. You knew you had Giannis. So you could round out your roster with those things in mind. Last year, you had to re-sign Chris Middleton. Last year, you had to re-sign Brooke Lopez. And that one went all the way down to the wire, that for a very brief moment, a lot of people thought Brooke Lopez was leaving to join the Houston Rockets. You make the trade for Damian Lillard. But prior to that, I think one of the big things that we oftentimes forget, you sign Malik Beasley, who, by the way, is having a terrific season so far this year with the Detroit Pistons. One of the bigger surprises in basketball. It's the sixth seed in the East right now. Malik Beasley's playing great for the Pistons. Malik Beasley played great for the Bucks last year offensively. Malik Beasley in that role made a whole lot of sense when he's playing next to Drew Holiday. So Drew Holiday is taking on the defensive assignments. Malik Beasley's out there to play off ball, to knock down open shots, and to give you the offense in the backcourt. Makes sense. A week before training camp, you trade Drew Holiday for Damian Lillard. And that move, all the other moves that you made in the offseason, it just didn't fit because you changed massively, changed the identity of your team. It was the number one thing when you look around the Eastern Conference that gave me the most pause about teams like the New York Knicks, teams, you know, like the Philadelphia 76ers, who dramatically reshaped their roster on the fly. In the case of the Knicks, changed their identity overnight. A Tibbs team, a grinded-out defense that had some special offensive players, but it was largely fueled by Jalen Brunson. This year's Knicks, an offensive team waiting for the defense to get there to those levels that it was a season ago. That's what the Bucks did. It takes time to really work that through the process, to get that to where it needs to be. So any team that went through those major changes or made a big trade, you look at it and you say, I remember that last year. It takes more time than you anticipate. And I think we're really starting to see that this year. The chemistry that's built up between Dame and Giannis, there is at least two or three lobs we saw from Damian Lillard to Giannis tonight. That is starting to become second nature with that duo. But the personnel decisions and how, again, what we went through one by one, those guys were on the team. Everybody wondering, too, about trades that the Bucks would make because we heard the group talk about versatility in the offseason. And I think people took that and ran with it as, well, that just means you got to trade Brook Lopez. You need versatility. You got to have a switchable big. From day one, I took that as, look, we need Brook Lopez. We need somebody that can play in the front court. We need backcourt defenders. Like, we have to have different looks that we can throw at teams and not just, hey, we're playing this way because that's the way the Bucks play. That's what the Bucks are able to do in the offseason. One by one, all the moves they made. Torian Prince, he scored 3 points tonight. Torian Prince has still been very impactful, even when he's not scoring, with his defense and what it means for different lineups you can throw out there. Giannis at the five, Torian Prince at the four. Torian Prince comes in, he's an upgrade over Jay Crowder. Delon Wright, you know, we talked about it at the time. That was a signing a lot of people were very high on, very excited for. We haven't seen much of Delon Wright this season. And ordinarily, you'd look at that as a bad thing and say, man, the Bucks really whiffed here. Like, what happened with this move? I still maintain present-day Delon Wright is better for your team and a better player than present-day Patrick Beverley. The Bucks upgraded there. The good news for the Bucks that offsets maybe you're not getting what you anticipated from Delon Wright, you're getting it from Ryan Rollins. And you have Delon Wright that you can lean on if something else goes wrong. The last piece is Gary Trent Jr. And when we talk about the offense starting to make this movement, Malik Beasley's a better shooter than Gary Trent Jr. Just about everything else, Gary Trent Jr. gives you more than you got from Malik Beasley last season. That is not to knock Malik Beasley or to downgrade him. It is just fact. Gary Trent Jr. is a more active defender. He's a gambler. We've seen it pay off more times than not this season. Gary Trent Jr. can knock down movement threes. Gary Trent Jr. can knock down threes, period, but he can do more with that. He can put the ball on the floor, get into the paint, hit mid-range shots, attack the rim. He has been a massive, massive upgrade over Malik Beasley for this team, for what this team needs. And that's a big piece of the offense starting to move north for the Bucks is Gary Trent Jr. and the bench. When we talk about this team playing better after the first 10 games of the season, what were the big things that stood out early in the season? The Bucks weren't hitting shots, and Gary Trent Jr., more than anyone, was missing shots. That's not the case now. And you look at a bench where a year ago you were leaning on 20-plus minutes from Jay Crowder, 20-plus minutes from Patrick Beverley, 20-plus minutes from Pat Connaughton. That was your bench. That was the strength of your bench, and, of course, Bobby Portis. Well, this year, we just mentioned the upgrades that you have. Chris Middleton has been a part of the bench because of Torian Prince's play so far. It's given you the ability to kind of work Chris Middleton back into the mix. Bobby Portis, after a slow start, just as we mentioned with Gary Trent Jr., he has been terrific for the Bucks and really been the Bobby Portis of old and given you that. But the rest of the guys, Gary Trent Jr., what he's given, the spark offensively, A.J. Green, Pat Connaughton has gone from a heavy usage guy to a break in case of emergency and has been very effective for this team so far this season. So top to bottom, it just makes sense. The pieces fit together, and that more than anything, I think, is what we're really seeing here for the Bucks, not just lately, for 42 games, where, again, they are among the 10 best teams in the league in offense, defense, and net rating. We'll see if they can keep that going this weekend as they hit the road. Four-game road trip here, and it certainly presents its share of challenges. The first of those matchups is Saturday night in Inglewood, California, where the Bucks get their first look at the Intuit Dome. We'll preview that matchup with the Clippers and the rest of the NBA scoreboard as we're starting to see everything go final. Some very interesting scores, especially in the Eastern Conference, and what that means for the standings. We'll get to that and wrap things up after this on Bucks Talk.
Bucks Talk.
A professional win tonight, as Doc Rivers put it, for his Bucks team that, again, we've gone over quite a few times already, but they did not arrive in Milwaukee at Mitchell International Airport until roughly 5 o'clock this afternoon. Came directly to the arena and played this game. They got into town at 5. Coach availability began at 5:45. So you're talking about leaving the airport, coming to the arena, getting in a quick change, hitting the podium, and let's go. Players that had their shooting group starting as early as 5:30-ish. It was certainly an ordeal here for the Bucks, who had the tip time pushed back an hour and just dominate the Miami Heat. We didn't know what to expect in this week. It could have been an ugly game where you would chalk it up to the travel woes and a weird week for the Bucks. It certainly looked that way the first couple of minutes when Miami scored 18 of the first 21 points. But a strong showing from that point forward as the Bucks dominate Miami for this 29-point win. They are now 25-17, a season best, 8 games above 500. It may not seem like anything to celebrate. This is a team, though, that did not move above 500 until the final day of November because of that 2-8 start to the season. And you've started to see more and more teams come on strong here, especially in the Eastern Conference. The Indiana Pacers, another team that were left for dead. They're 24-20 in fifth place. If the season were to end today, that would be the first-round matchup for a second year in a row. Only this time, the Bucks would be the higher seed with home court advantage. But the Bucks and Pacers are 4-5. The Detroit Pistons are 6th. But because of the final scores we have had today, the thing to keep in mind is the loss column. And now, especially that we're at the midpoint, past the midpoint, on the NBA schedule here for the Bucks and basically every other team in the league except for the Charlotte Hornets, loss column is the important thing to focus on here. And with the results that we've seen today, by the way, the Boston Celtics just lost to the Los Angeles Lakers, an ugly one. So Boston is now up to 14 losses on the season. They had won back-to-back games, a 40-point win on the road against the Warriors, then beat the Clippers by just 4 points. But you've started to see the losses pile up a bit more for the Boston Celtics now. We mentioned the offense and defensive numbers not to the levels it was a season ago. And with this final score, the Celtics have 14 losses. So the Bucks just 3 games back of the Celtics in the loss column. Just 1 game back of the Knicks in the loss column. Those two teams are 2-3 right now in the Eastern Conference. Now, look, it's going to be a challenging road ahead for the Bucks to move past either of those teams for a couple of reasons. It's a difficult schedule. We mentioned the games played, what that means for back-to-backs and the volume of them the Bucks have down the stretch. Also, that schedule becomes more difficult with your opponent win percentage. Once we get to February 1st, you have 35 games remaining. 36 potentially if that Pelicans game isn't rescheduled, and 32 of them are going to be against teams that are either in the playoffs or expect to be a playoff team. So that is going to be a big part of the challenge as well. Also, not having the tiebreaker against the Cavs, the Celtics, or the Knicks means you got to finish with a better record than those teams. But the Bucks are starting to enter that conversation now, just 1 back of the Knicks and 3 back of the Celtics, and perhaps more importantly, they are 9-1 against those teams, 10-1 now with this win against the Miami Heat, directly behind them. The Pacers, the Pistons, the Magic, the Hawks, and the Heat. And you're starting to see separation there. 3 games up on the Pacers in the loss column. Saturday night's late night basketball. Our first look at the Intuit Dome in Inglewood, California. It's the Bucks and the Clippers. 9:30 tip. 9 o'clock is when our pregame coverage begins on these stations. And, of course, be sure to stick around after the game for Bucks Talk. We will talk with you then.